Welcome to our April series of seminars, SOFA, Spirituality, Interfaith Dialogue as a Window, Mirror, and Sliding Glass Door. We are honored and delighted to welcome the Reverend Liddy Barlow and Rabbi Ron Simons to lead this series. And it's going to be such a great series, I don't want anyone to miss. So listen up. Next week, we will not meet because it's Easter. And the next Sunday, April 16th, we'll meet 1 hour earlier at 8:45 to accommodate the single 10 o'clock worship service. And then the last 2 weeks will be back to normal. So I hope everybody's got that. And now a warm welcome to Liddy and Ron.
Well, thank you, everyone.
Hello, everyone.
I just want to say that we're not meeting next week because I have plans on Easter. Just wanted to break the ice a little bit.
There you go. There's important, you know, sleeping in to happen next Sunday morning.
That could be for me. That's right.
All right.
I'll still be eating matzah.
So we are super excited to be here, to be kicking off a four-part series of one of our favorite things to do together, which is SOFA spirituality. What is SOFA spirituality? You are probably asking yourself. Well, we shall explain all. So today we are going to kind of talk over how this came to be, define what SOFA spirituality even is. And then we're going to get to experience the SOFA process for the first time today via an interview and a dialogue. But first, a little bit about how this came to happen. So for starters, let's figure out who we are.
So I'd like to introduce you to my dear friend, Reverend Liddy Barlow, who is the executive minister of Christian Associates of Southwest Pennsylvania, which includes 28 different church bodies across the region, and serves as the umbrella organization for ecumenical work among the Christian community in Southwest Pennsylvania. And as a part of that, does all of this work as well as outreach to other faith communities and social justice work and the like. And Liddy and I have known each other now for, 27 years or something like that, right? It's on like 8, 9, 10 years, something like that.
Today is actually my 9th anniversary at Christian Associates.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow. So actually, we've known each other for 9 years. And we knew that as we were going into the work of interfaith and community engagement, that we needed to be partners. And I can say unabashedly that we are spiritual friends.
So I want to introduce you to my friend, Rabbi Ron Simons. Ron is the Senior Director of Jewish Life at the Jewish Community Center of Greater Pittsburgh. And as part of that role, he is also the creator and the founding director of the JCC's Center for Loving Kindness and Civic Engagement. And the center aims to amplify those long-held values of love your neighbor as yourself and do not stand idle while your neighbor bleeds, while redefining neighbor from a geographic term to a moral concept. Now, that last piece about redefining neighbor is super awesome and profound, and Ron did not make that up. That is actually a quotation from Rabbi Joachim Prince, who was a civil rights era rabbi who actually spoke at the March on Washington immediately before Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was introduced as the speaker. It's Prince's idea that the Center for Loving Kindness is amplifying in our community, that our neighbors are not just the people we can see and touch nearby us, but our neighbors is everyone that God calls us to care for. So we're here in Pittsburgh. We've got these two institutions. We have Christian Associates, this long-standing body. We have this brand new, kind of newly forming, hasn't even really turned out to be anything yet organization. And then in the summer of 2017, the demonstrations in Charlottesville happened.
So that Unite the Right rally was just a shock to all of us, although I think we probably could have seen it coming. And in fact, for the year beforehand, we were trying to figure out how the JCC, at that point, a 125-year-old organization, could begin to take the values that we use within our walls and also within our geographic community and spread them much larger. And so when Charlottesville happened, I called Liddy and I said, we got to do something. So what we decided to do was to have a sermon forum. We shared a sermon from King. We shared a sermon from one of the rabbis of Rodef Shalom congregation back at the turn of the era, the beginning of the 20th century, talking about how difficult it is to change the world is just as difficult as climbing up Niagara Falls backwards. And a passage from Muslim tradition, one of Muhammad's sermons. We shared those with 150 or so people. But most importantly, what we did is we didn't just share them. We shared a segment of it. And then we said to the people sitting at the tables, can you talk to your neighbor about this? And it worked. And we realized that the essence of doing this type of work is not about experts standing up front, but about the dialogue that happens at the tables.
And so growing on our work after Charlottesville, we proceeded over the next couple years to host a series of these kinds of conversations. We called them hopeful conversations focused on important community issues. And each time we examined these issues, whether it was addiction or immigration or gun violence, from the words of experts, but also from the experiences of the people around the tables, of the people who care about this, who maybe have some personal experience or some particular passions. And we found that cultivating conversation is really what this work can be all about. I'm pressing advance and nothing's happening.
Next slide.
Oh, there we go, sorry.
And then, of course, October 27th, 2018 happened. The day was going to happen no matter what, but of course, the events were so tragic for us as a Jewish community and gratefully for all of us because we all felt it in some way. And so it was because of generations, decades of interfaith work that had happened here at Westminster and in other neighborhoods around Pittsburgh that when we gathered at Soldiers and Sailors the day after, it was easy for us to have 100 different spiritual leaders stand behind those three rabbis and say, this is an assault on all of us. And in fact, we were supposed to have one of those hopeful conversations among spiritual leaders. I think it was supposed to be on November 8th, and we were a little bit slow. We hadn't really planned it. We thought it would be something about Thanksgiving, and we'd have bagels and, you know, all of that. And Liddy said, well, maybe we should cancel it. And I said, no, we have to talk.
And so We Have to Talk became then the title of our next series of programs, where we simply brought diverse spiritual leaders, defining spiritual leaders very broadly, not only clergy in the traditional sense, but also others in leadership roles in houses of worship and faith institutions across the region, together, because building relationship is really what leads to faith to communities where interfaith relationships are marked by mutual understanding and mutual care. So we were on a roll with We Have to Talk and with all of the things that came out of that. We had amazing series of large and small group things. We had we were doing some work with the Center for Victims on the South Side, bringing interfaith spiritual leaders through their exhibit space to learn about
Muslim
trauma.
Imams studying the Torah and teaching us new things about Hebrew Christian scriptures.
It was so cool. And we thought that work was going to go on face to face pretty much forever. Oops.
Wow. Man, it got hard. And we had to figure out, what do we do? And so we came up with this idea.
It's the next slide.
Oh, please.
Yeah. So the lockdowns happen, and we spend those first couple days in the middle of March canceling things, canceling one thing after another until our calendar for the rest of 2020 is just this one blank question mark. And then we got a phone call.
So the Russell Berry Foundation in New Jersey, you might know Russell Berry because when you go into a Hallmark store, those are the little dolls and things, right?
Yeah, exactly. If you've ever had a like teddy bear with a red ribbon on it that says Russ, that's Russell Berry.
They had come to us earlier because everyone came to Pittsburgh. They wanted to do good because of the shooting. And we started to have conversations. We weren't sure where it was going to go. But then all of a sudden, the day after we closed the JCC for the first time in 125 years, I got an email from Angelica Berry, the widow namesake. And she said, you and Liddy should take your interfaith work national, given that we're going into the pandemic.
And we said, okay, yes, we definitely will. And then we said to each other, what on earth does that mean? So we started brainstorming. This is actually a quotation from an email. I went to going back in my emails and looking at those first things. So we started thinking about what is it about the work that we've done together, this partnership between Christian Associates and the Center for Loving Kindness. What is it about that work that actually has been meaningful, that's actually meant something? And so we decided that the things that we're good at are bringing spiritual leaders together, building intentionally diverse spaces, drawing on the resources of our faith traditions, and naming the shared values across the diversity of those traditions. So that blend of the very specific, the particularly Christian pieces, the particularly Jewish pieces, the particularly Baha'i or Buddhist pieces, but also at the same time, what brings us all together.
And so we created SOFA Spirituality. I think you're the one that came up with the term.
We were doing a lot of brainstorming.
A lot of brainstorming, yeah. I know. The ideas were flying back and forth, right? And what we decided is, given the reality that we were entering into, is that lots of people were going to be home and they were going to be sitting on their sofa. And we also realized that lots of people in our world, perhaps you've noticed this, are a little bit drawn away from what we would call organized religion, but still say, I'm spiritual. And so we wanted to try to tap in to that sense of the unknown of what was coming and what we did know about people's religious identities being more spiritual than being organized religion.
Yeah. So SOFA Spirituality winds up having three components to it. And the SOFA Spirituality process has taken a lot of different forms in different places. There's the public work that we do that's open to everyone. There's ways that we have customized this work with particular communities. And there's even ways that we have done it in face-to-face settings, like we're going to do here. But in all of those settings, the SOFA work has these three components.
So the first thing that we do is we have actually recorded over 150 interviews with spiritual leaders across the world. Each one of those interviews is only about 8 or 9 minutes long. And it affords the spiritual leader to talk about one aspect of his or her, their spirituality. Now, we pre-record it because perhaps you notice that sometimes people like us like to go on and on and on. But by pre-recording it, we can keep it into that YouTube kind of video of 8 to 9 minutes. We then take that video and we put it in front of a group of people. Sometimes it's homogeneous, like we are today. Sometimes it's very heterogeneous. And we say, we've watched the interview. Now let's have a dialogue about it. And that dialogue is not to say, oh, I'm going to get down everything that I need to know, like for today, about a Passover Seder. You're not going to walk away being an expert in Passover Seders. You are going to walk away having had a window into someone else's spirituality. That's the interview. You're going to have an opportunity to look at yourself in a mirror, not because you celebrate Passover, but because there might be something in what we hear in that interview and what we talk about that says, oh, now I know something more about myself because I'm either similar or different than that. And then finally, the entire package is a sliding glass door. It's an invitation to open up that back door, to sit down with someone at their kitchen table, not their dining room table, because that's a little bit too formal for us, but their kitchen table, and have a cup of tea. And to say, well, that was really nice. I learned something. I enjoyed our company together. May I come back? Or would you like to open up the sliding glass door to come into my kitchen? And we think that those three, the window, the mirror, and the sliding glass door, is all an invitation for us to tap into our spirituality.
And that metaphor of window, mirror, and sliding glass door comes from actually a scholar of children's literature. Dr. Radim Sims Bishop teaches, I believe, at The Ohio State University. And that's the way that she describes good children's picture books, right? That kids need books they can see themselves in, books that give them a window into somebody else's world, and books that help them make that passage in our diverse society to really be in relationship with one another. And as soon as we discovered Dr. Sims Bishop's metaphor, we realized that that was the perfect way to think about our SOFA spirituality work as well. So we're going to experience this today, and we're going to be experiencing this over the next couple weeks. And so all of our SOFA segments begin with setting some ground rules, making some expectations known for the people who are participating. We call that our covenant. And it simply has these five expectations, that this is a place where we are kind. And we often talk about the fact that, like, people think about kindness as this kind of, you know, preschool virtue, you know, like, don't we grow out of that? But actually, kindness is the foundation of all the world's great religious faiths, that kindness is simply that idea that we treat others the way we would want to be treated.
We want to listen to each other with curiosity, that we're not just going to say, oh, yeah, there she goes again, right? But to really be curious, what are we actually talking about here? And to listen with attentiveness.
We're going to try as best as we're able to engage without judgment. It's really easy when we're listening to people who are different from ourselves to be having that little running narrative in the back of your mind, like, oh, well, I mean, I know this person is wrong, but I guess I'll keep listening. What would it be like to lay that impulse down for a little while?
And can I actually speak with honesty and ask a question or challenge someone in an appropriate way, or really speak from the depths of my soul, not what I'm supposed to say, but what I really feel like spiritually.
And then finally, we ask that that people share the floor. And this is often the most important, because these SOFA spirituality encounters are, by their nature, time limited. When we do our public SOFAs, they're over in 45 minutes. And so if you get that one person who's taking up a lot of space in the conversation, that can mean that others don't get the chance to participate. So we always ask that that people cultivate a sense of self-awareness. And if you tend to be a person who takes up space in conversations, maybe this is the time to step back. And if you're a person whose voice is often not heard in group conversations, it might be a time to step forward. So those are the 5 points in our covenant. And since we're going to do this today, can we just get a show of hands if you accept that covenant for our time together?
And we're assuming online also that you're raising your hand now. So. And I think we're ready to get going. What do you
Absolutely.
Think?
So when we do SOFA in a smaller scale setting, we usually do a round of introductions just to kind of warm up everybody's voice. So maybe what we can do in this setting is for you to just turn to your neighbor and introduce yourself in these ways. Tell us that you will be following our covenant. Tell us your name, the pronouns you use to describe yourself. Tell us what faith tradition you come from, and maybe for today here at Westminster, if there's any other traditions back in your story that have also informed who you are. And then where are you? Where are you geographically? Like, what's your neighborhood? And what are the circumstances of your life right now? What are you up to?
And if you're online, you're welcome to just type a little bit of that in the chat.
Absolutely. So let's take just 2 minutes, turn to your neighbor and share this basic introduction.
And then we'll just go into
the Yeah.
is our next thing.
All right. So thank you for getting to know each other, whether that's online. And by the way, we have 9 neighbors online with us as well. And now we're ready to show you our video.
Yeah. So this particular interview that we are sharing with you this morning was one that we recorded at the very beginning of Sofa Spirituality. Like, I want to say this is maybe like the second or third interview that I recorded
before Passover that year.
Yeah. So this was really early on. We were still getting our feet under ourselves in terms of what Sofa Spirituality even was and what the format of these videos will be. And you'll see that as the weeks go on, we get a little bit more comfort, mm-hmm. I think, with the process. You'll also see that at the beginning of this project, literally in March of 2020, we were really focused on the implications of the pandemic. And so this is a very pandemic era interview.
But let's also keep in mind that even though many of us are out and about, that still the pandemic still impacts how we gather in community. Even just think about how full church is on a regular basis nowadays.
Yeah. So let's sit back and enjoy our conversation. So
you have to sit back on your sofa.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, your pews.
Yeah. So like, just imagine that this pew is like 150% more comfortable than it actually is.
We invite you also to take up a glass of Chardonnay if you like. Oh, well, we can't do that either. It's too early. Right. Okay. Yeah.
These are not drunk as you suppose. It is only 9 o'clock in the morning. That's a line from Christian scriptures.
What is that?
Yeah, we'll talk later. Okay. Okay. Sit back. Imagine your beverage of choice. Imagine your comfortable sofa. You're together with friends. Let's watch an interview.
Welcome to Sofa Spirituality, a project of Christian Associates of Southwest Pennsylvania and the Jewish community of Greater Pittsburgh's Center for Loving Kindness and Civic Engagement. I'm Reverend Liddy Barlow from Christian Associates, and I'm joined for today's conversations with Rabbi Jeff Sirkman from Larchmont Temple in Larchmont, New York. Welcome, Rabbi Sirkman.
It's a pleasure.
Wonderful. So you serve a Reform Jewish congregation in Larchmont, New York. How long have you been serving there?
You know, this is a long time, 33 years since I was a beginner rabbi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's been really the congregation has brought me up and raised me in the rabbinate. And it's been an amazing covenantal partnership.
Wonderful. Oh, that's so great to hear. It's fun to hear how our communities that we serve wind up shaping us as spiritual leaders, as much as we have any responsibility for shaping.
Any responsibility, you are
right. Exactly. So great. So we've invited you to share something from your faith tradition. What have you brought for us?
You know what I brought today, especially we are on the eve virtually of Passover. Mm-hmm. I brought a copy of the Passover Haggadah, mm-hmm. Which is the story that we tell and the rendition that we tell, though every Haggadah is different. And this is by my teacher at Boston University, where I was an undergrad and graduate student, Professor Elie Wiesel. Wiesel came to BU the year that I came to BU in 1977. And I became one of his early students and did my master's degree with Professor Wiesel. And it's partly the reason that I use and chose the Wiesel Haggadah. The Haggadah, of course, is our telling of that Passover story of our redemption from slavery in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unique. Every year we tell the same story. You would think, you know, after a few years, 10, 20. Because we are in a different place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the people gathered around our table this year virtually will be in a different place. The story means something different to us, depending on what's going on in the world around us. And so the story is reborn every year. This year, we're going to experience a kind of confinement. We're not in servitude, but we're sheltering in place. our freedom is restricted. Mm-hmm. Our ability to do what we want to do, even in this country of democracy and freedom, we are not at liberty to do what we want to do. For the common good, we have to, you know, pull back, make wise decisions. And so the story is going to mean a lot of different things to us this year than it, I think, ever has before. Mm-hmm. It's also significant that it's Professor Wiesel. Professor Wiesel was unique and, of course, a primary influence in my life. And Elie Wiesel, the Holocaust survivor, Nobel Prize winner, helps us understand that it is, in fact, the story we tell about ourselves that connects us with one another as we come to realize we share a story. Our lives are a network of interconnected stories. And Liddy, when you tell your story and I start hearing it, I recognize, oh my gosh, I think we share a chapter or two, or at least a paragraph or a few pages, because my story is not just my story. Somehow it's the story of the people of Israel. And somehow there's going to be people around our tables that are not Jewish, that are from different faith traditions. I can hear my story echoed in that, you know, story of Latino immigration, or that story of that Egyptian, literally, last year at our table, coming, not Jewish, but coming out of Coptic, coming out of Egypt. So that our stories really connect and help us understand our common humankind, our common humanity.
Yeah.
How important is that this year of all years,
right,
to recognize we are not in life alone?
Yeah, exactly. And at this point, when we're all kind of writing this common chapter of our stories, you know, all of us are having this unique experience that's not like anything any of us have experienced before. And how important it is for us to write that story side by side, even when we can't necessarily be in the same physical spaces.
Yeah, and the gift, of course, of technology is that it can transcend our personal self-imposed isolation and help us understand we are all writing chapters in a compendium that's an anthology of humankind. And it's important for us to know that, we're not writing our own memoir alone, but connected in this human story and share it, you know, in that humanity.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for bringing us sort of around your Seder table in a sense, and also encouraging all of us to recognize our interconnection and that sense in which we author our stories, but also write our stories in collaboration with the people around us.
Yeah, how important. And you know, next year, I would only hope that you, you know, and anybody else out in the Pittsburgh community or wherever, can share a little brisket as well, face to face. It
will be fantastic. I will bookmark that and bring my fork. It's great. Friends, if you'd like to join us in conversation around the themes in my conversation today with Rabbi Sirkman, around that longing around freedom, around our authorship and our stories, and how our stories come together in this great compendium shared by people of faith everywhere, we'd invite you to sign up for one of our virtual conversations to explore these themes. Thanks so much, Rabbi Sirkman, and thanks for everybody watching too.
Thank you. Be well.
Jeff is my big brother rabbi, meaning that when I got out of seminary, I was
we have called in a lot of favors to put all these interviews together.
And Jeff held up, got up a story, the book that we use, that we will use on Wednesday night in order to tell the story and to go through the ritual. And just to show you that he brought up the Elie Wiesel one, where Elie Wiesel put in his own commentary, there are lots of different Haggadot, I guess you can call it liturgies, that walk us through what the Seder might look like in anyone's house, and you get to choose which liturgy you might be particularly interested in. Just so you don't think that we're totally spiritual and not commercial, this is the Maxwell House Haggadah, the deluxe edition, because back in the 1950s, They were trying to figure out how do they get market share in the Jewish community. So when you bought your coffee, you could get this. And boy, did it take off. They knew what they were doing. So that's what we're anticipating in the Jewish community moving forward into Wednesday night. But again, I want to be clear, this is not going to be Passover 101. You're not going to walk away from our conversation knowing everything you need to know about this book. You are, however, going to now have, hopefully, a mirror experience.
Yeah, so in SOFA sessions, after we enjoy our interview together, we then turn to our time of dialogue. And we usually start by putting one question up on the screen. So for today, I can't advance. There we go. So for today, let's think about this question. What did the COVID chapter of your story teach you about your faith? So if we're going to continue with Rabbi Sirkman's metaphor of writing a story, this chapter that's almost done, if not completely done, what did that chapter teach you about your faith? And then when we do SOFA, we say, or you might want to talk about something else. So you might want to talk about one of these questions instead. What are the stories that your faith community tells again and again every year? And in what ways do those stories feel new every time you encounter them? Or just like Rabbi Sirkman had his Haggadah from his beloved professor, Dr. Wiesel, what are the stories that you love to tell that remind you of a person who told them to you? Or what is the chapter in your spiritual story that you are writing right now? And who is writing that chapter with you?
That's a whole lot. And we're not going to answer them all. We're just trying to plant seeds. Ted, could you stop sharing the slides and could you show us the people that are at home? Because we want to invite the people that are home to raise their hands and to share as well.
Absolutely. So this is the time then in the SOFA session where we say to the people who are gathered, what would you like to talk about? And we then just depend on the people in the room to take one of those questions that caught your fancy and to go ahead and venture a response to it. This is the interactive part.
We'll do it
together. We'll do it as a whole group. Yep. So
Joan, John, Fred, Doug, encourage you to unmute Sarah. Encourage you to unmute yourself and join in the conversation, and I'll walk around the room here with a microphone.
Great. We'll start right here.
Yeah, what many of us learned, I'm sure, is from COVID is that what we used to think of the boundaries of the church, meaning the building, is not true. And often we have as many people viewing it online, either live or later in the week, as we do physically. And that's just a totally different definition for many of us of church.
Yeah, exactly. What are the other sort of COVID lessons from the COVID chapter of your story?
Anyone on? Here we go, Anne.
I learned that I can't really practice my spirituality or express my spirituality alone, that it very much demands and requires a community.
Let's see.
Well, everyone is different. We're kind of measured on that Myers-Briggs scale, if that still holds in science. But I felt that I was missing a lot of excitement that other people kind of jazzed me up a little bit. It wasn't very dynamic doing it myself. But there is also a need for quiet time. But I'm feeling very much at home in a church setting because I've experienced that my whole life. So I understand how difficult it would be for people who want to join a community but don't feel comfortable because they're shy or they are not used to that.
I don't necessarily, because I don't want to be a Christian, but I understand that the people who are celebrating Sabbath and communion at home might be asked to have some bread and a bit of wine at home. I'm having the table with the test of the perspective.
There you go.
It was unusual. It was uncomfortable, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
So I did it, but I didn't feel comfortable doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are times to be alone and there are times not to be alone. Mm-hmm. And too much loneliness is not very good. It doesn't really help spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed. I went into church early, that I got here locally, the main sanctuary. And I loved how Pastor Morris said that this is not Westminster's table, it's the Lord's table. And that just felt so, as an outsider, right? Because I don't take it, right, for obvious reasons, right? But that just felt so and wonderful.
I had a perception that when I saw people on Zoom, it was different from when I met them in five dimensions standing in front of me. That was a huge difference. Today, I just met somebody that I've been watching on Zoom for a long time, and this was not the same person that I saw on Zoom. They're much more real, and so make communication a lot different. So the Zoom communication is very restricted. And I was a teacher, and my students I saw on Zoom then are different from the ones I actually saw in a classroom. So that, during the pandemic, I did a lot of Zoom. I guess I know what three dimensions means, and then four dimensions. I'm thinking of five dimensions as people have auras.
I mean, I think there's something of that kind of spiritual, like I immediately sort of grasped what you got in that, right? Because I think it is like there's something of that connection that's around the physical person. I mean, I met someone this week at Thursday night's event, actually, that I had only previously met on Zoom. And, you know, and one of the aspects of that meeting is discovering that she's 5'2" and I'm 6 feet tall, right? And you're like, oh, you're a small person, you're a tall person. But there's more to it than that. I think there is something around the presence of a person and the energy. I mean, not to get too like woo-woo around this, but there is a difference in energy when we're physically in the presence of people. There's something about the vibrations of people's voices, I think.
Now, if I can chime in just a little, the first respondent there was talking about the benefits of COVID-19 of recognizing that we need to be together. We were in a unique situation because Mary Kay, myself, and our sister-in-law were cooped up in a motel room for 6 days during COVID on a trip to Ireland. And that offered us a great opportunity to be literally very close to one another for 6 days, having all three meals together and praying together. And I value that highly because the dimension of our relationships, all three of us, including my sister-in-law from Denver, I think really moved forward and very, very nicely as a result. But that's really not what you're addressing in your questions today. But that was good for us.
It is what we're addressing because there are things that are COVID keepers, right? That we say, wow. Right. I mean, we're going to look back and you know, when we're telling these stories to our grandchildren, our nieces and nephews, we're going to say, boy, it was hard, but let me tell you something good that happened during that time.
Yeah, we of course are all in a lot of meetings, and those meetings turned into Zoom meetings. And my experience was usually that we got the work done, you know, the time and place and date and all of that stuff. But what I really missed was the ability to just reach out to my friend and say, you know, like before the meeting or after the meeting or whatever, and catch up on this, that, and the other. That we didn't, because when you're in a Zoom meeting, it ends and that's it. So, I missed that.
That's beautiful. So I can tell you also that when I'm not playing Rabbi, this role, I'm playing Rabbi's husband, because my wife Barbara is the Rabbi of Temple David of Motherwell, where we live. And as everyone was trying to figure out how to do COVID services, she refused to go on Facebook and refused to go on YouTube. And it's not a big place, it's around 200 or so families. So they stuck to Zoom. And still to this day, their hybrid is only on Zoom. And her theory behind it was that if we're on Zoom, then people can come 15 minutes early and they can stay 15 minutes late, and they can talk to each other in a Zoom room, as opposed to just seeing a performance, mm-hmm. right, on the bima, on the pulpit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me turn just to one other thing, because I know that our time is coming up. I am really interested in what Jeffrey had to say about the stories that we tell year after year. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help but to think, again, about my experience in the sanctuary just an hour ago, when Pastor Forrest said, "I'm going to tell you the story yet again," mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and started with the story of the table. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to tell a story every year about redemption. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, what's it like every week? Mm-hmm. Tell that story again, again, again. Mm-hmm. For you, mm-hmm. spiritually.
Anyone online?
After decades of doing it, it's normal.
What is it add to your life to have that every week, have that same story?
Well, it along with a couple men's groups during the week, it just reinforces the message, because of course what happens outside of those three times distracts from the message. And so those are just experiences that reinforce, remind, allows me, and I'm sure others, to reflect on it.
So here and then there.
Yeah. Just one word. I find them comforting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it calls us back to ourselves, it comforts us, and?
Well, every week or month in communion or week in church, we hear the same thing over and over again, but at least I'm only 15, so a week is a long time. You know, you are a different person going into that time after that month, whatever's happened. So even just the slightest bit, you get to hear it from a little bit of a different perspective, and maybe it can relate to you differently throughout different times in your life.
And you're reflecting on what Jeffrey said, mm-hmm. about how I'm going to be a different person next year. Maybe you'll come to my house for brisket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But at that point, which is a big part of the Passover experience, the food. But
yeah,
I think what's really interesting is that here we're talking about a once a year event. And of course, Jews have weekly events also. But we don't need to. They want to do a monthly? Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Presbyterians.
I forgot. Sorry. Right. I have so much to learn.
That's why we're here.
That's the honesty,
right? Right?
But I think that having that check-in on a regular basis, not just an annual basis, I mean, that just speaks so powerfully, mm-hmm. to why we need it.
Yeah.
I think family stories that I hear over and over again, each time I hear them, I learn something more about them. And in my family, there's nobody left but my older brother, and he's in very bad health. So there was a story we had that we lived in a haunted house, okay? And as I get older, I begin to have more questions about that. And there's nobody to ask because I was the youngest in the family. So I tried to find out from my brother to confirm certain things, and I did. But once he's gone, there are so many nuances to every experience. Each time I hear the story again, I realize something else I didn't hear the last time. Mm-hmm. And you can go over them and over them and over them and pick up layers and different things that I focused on one aspect later, you know, and 2 years ago. Now I'm thinking of it and thinking of another aspect of it. And just the stories are so rich, and the richness is something you only can plumb when you hear them over and over and over again as you get older and have different questions about them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such a compelling connection to these stories of our faith traditions, of our scriptural stories, the stories of our holidays and of our sacraments. You can imagine those original communities who experienced the Exodus or who experienced the Last Supper, like personally, the way that they must have felt compelled to tell that story in a way that would keep people telling it. And here we are continuing to tell those stories.
John, so John, what you just shared really touches something very deep for me, because my mom is a repetitive storyteller. She's not a very good storyteller, right? She's not on here. She,
I don't know.
But she tells the same stories. Like once you say one thing, boom, she'll go into that recording. Mm-hmm. And so many of us say, that was really nice, thank you, right? But if we actually listen to that fifth dimension that you talked about, mm-hmm. maybe I would be more respectful about hearing that story over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Learning sense.
I'll add something to this whole issue. My sister was, one of my older sisters was my main source of history, but she was a terrible historian. So the story she told me, I grew up with doubts about, and I have to confirm them with my brother, who is a little more, a better historian, but not a great historian. So I have unanswered questions no one can answer, and I still wonder about them. I wish I could talk to my family who have passed on before I was old enough to be able to ask these questions.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we have four Gospels. That's why we have Kings and Chronicles, right? It's because we've got a lot of different versions of these same stories.
I'll say personally also, but I think that's why all of us have that concern that we have the important conversations before it's too late, mm-hmm. with people that we love. With and that in and of itself is also a part of the spirituality of storytelling.
Yeah. So as our time together comes to a close, I hope you feel like you've experienced a little bit of that window into Jeff Cirkman's spiritual life and a little bit of a mirror of the lives of yourself, of your neighbors here at Westminster. And we are just getting started. So we will be back the Sunday after Easter with our next installment. We'll be at 8:45. Our interview at 8:45 is going to focus on the Muslim month of Ramadan, which will be coming to a close shortly after our session. So it's nice to be in the season of so many holidays for our neighbors that we can talk about. And join us. Come talk about Ramadan. How is Ramadan like a gymnasium? Find out the Sunday after Easter. We'll look forward to joining you on the sofa then.
Thank you, everyone. And if you're interested in the interim, you want to see some more interviews, just go to that Pastor Google, right, and type in sofaspirituality.org, and you can pick up, I think we have 120 published, mm-hmm. or so you can watch anything you want at any time that you want.
Mm-hmm. So, thank you, everyone. Super, thanks so much.
Thank you.